Our next guest on the program is an actor and environmental activist. You know him from countless roles on television and in films. Victor Ehrlich and St. Elsewhere. Great role in Arrested Development these days as Clifford Mayne in Better Call Saul. Films like She-Devil, An Officer and a Gentleman, and Best in Show. Great to welcome back to the program the very talented and gracious Ed Begley Jr.
Well, thank you so much for making some time for us. I thought it had been longer. Now, we had just talked to you last July, so I appreciate you coming back with us so soon here.
Happy to be on with you, Richard.
Now, since the last time we talked, big event in your life, you've got a third grandchild now.
I do, Ari. He's a wonderful young lad, and he was just up, down for a visit. I'm in L.A. He lives up in Portland. And I saw my son and grandkids just a few weeks ago up there. So I'm getting a lot of grandpa time, which I like.
That's wonderful. Is he about 8 months old now?
You're very good. He's 10 months right now.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Well, that's exciting. Well, I want to talk about a number of things, but we're coming up on the final episodes of Better Call Saul. And for fans of the show, we have just been hanging on since the mid-season break here to see what happens. But what an ending to the first half of the season. And those episodes, those last scenes with your character, Cliff Mayne, and Howard Hamlin were so powerful. We've had Patrick on the show, and my gosh, it was just a masterclass in acting with you two.
You're nice to include me in that, but he sure is wonderful. Everybody is so good. Bob and, you know, Ray and all of them. You know, it's just an amazing group of people. Jonathan, Michael Mando, that I get to work with all those folks is extraordinary for me. And they don't tell me what's going to happen. So when I see a script with a scene that I'm in, I know what's going to happen. But other than that, I don't really know how this is going to draw to close. I'm as excited as you are to see it.
Well, I love the fact that Cliff is such a decent man that even when Howard is blowing things up at this this big meeting, his concern is obviously the company, but also his friend and colleague, Howard.
Right. Yeah, it's a very nice character they've drawn there. You know, Peter Gould and Vince Gilligan are such great writers, and the whole writer's room there is just first class. What they do every episode of that show is nothing short of extraordinary. I'm just proud to be part of it.
I love the scene at the cafe with you and Ray Seahorn when Bob, as Howard, drives by in the car. I sure hope, I mean, everybody in this show is deserving of recognition, but I hope finally that Emmy nomination comes Ray's way. She is so good, and your scene together is just perfect.
I hope so, too. I'm hoping for that more than anybody. I love everybody in the show, but she's the one I really think, if we live in a fair and just world, she'll get that nod for what she does in that show. Every episode, just without fail.
I was very excited to see that you're part of the reboot of Queer as Folk as Winston Beaumont. Tell me a little bit about that experience so far.
Yeah, it was a wonderful show years ago. They've decided to redo it in New Orleans, and it's a great town, as you know, and I love getting down there to shoot it and to work with these wonderful people. They're just a great cast and great, you know, writing staff and producers, directors, unbelievable, each and every one of them.
And given what's happening in our world right now, it seems like the time is perfect for this show to come back.
It is, isn't it? I think it's time. It's a wonderful backdrop there to be in the South as it is, and with the progress we've made in many ways today in 2022, even with some backsliding here and there, of course, you know, with that struggle that we go through for the rights that I think are so appropriate for, you know, all the people featured in the show and beyond. I think we've come a long way, and it's a wonderful show that talks about that in a very sensitive manner.
I want to talk about a couple of things I've watched recently, Ed. One of them was on cable, and I had to check it out because I love the film. Just an amazing performance by your dad in Sweet Bird of Youth.
He was a great actor, and he had many great victories as a performer, and Sweet Bird of Youth was a top one for him because he won the Oscar for that and sure deserved it. He had also won a Tony Award for Inherit the Wind with Paul Muni on stage on Broadway there, and he was great in 12 Angry Men, and he just did so much great work. Another great one is Boomerang, wonderful movie from years ago. Just terrific. I hadn't seen that in a while and saw it recently. Ilya Kazan directed that. Just great.
And I had never seen it before, but it was on a cable station here a few months ago. The Rod Serling wonderful Patterns. Teleplay, Patterns. Wow. Why? And I'd wanted to see that. I'd read about it for years, but I finally got a chance to see it. God, that was great.
Did you see the one with Van Heflin or Richard Kiley?
Van Heflin.
Good.
Yeah.
Good, good. Both of them good in their own wonderful way. And I'm glad you got to see that. That's one I hadn't seen for many, many years. I saw it when I was so young, I didn't remember much about it. And I saw it, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago, was gobsmacked by how good it was. And specifically, being very fair, and I'm fair with myself and with my father and all my family members, how good my dad was in that. Really just neutral observer, really. I can be that, and I am with my family and friends. And boy, he was great in that.
We're talking with Ed Begley Jr. here on Downtown. I also rewatched recently, I think, one of your best roles. And we didn't talk about it last time you were on, but a terrific performance in the HBO film Recount as David Boies.
Oh, yeah. That was a challenge playing that very famous and important lawyer, you know, for that very important part of his life when he was doing the recount trial there in Tallahassee in Florida, and then finally before the Supreme Court. So that was a little bit of history there. And, you know, Al Gore came pretty close. It wasn't thousands, it was 150 votes. And you can certainly argue that there was a lot of people stricken from the voting rolls too that shouldn't have been. William G. Whiting is a reverend. He's a Baptist minister, I believe. But since there's a Willie Whiting that was a convicted felon, they took William G. Whiting off the rolls. And that didn't seem right to me, but it's what is, and you move on. And you know, it was a very important and well-done thing by Jay Roach. I really liked the show a lot.
We're doing a 50th anniversary special later in the year, celebrating the debut of MASH back in 1972. And you had a wonderful appearance. I think it was in season 8, an episode called Too Many Cooks, where you played a soldier who was maybe not a great soldier, but was a wonderfully talented gourmet chef. Do you remember much about that experience?
It was a dream come true because I loved that show so much. And indeed, I knew a lot of the same guys. The creative side of it, I knew Larry Gelbart, who was the writer. I knew Gene Reynolds, the producer, and he directed a lot of them. He had put me in after 2 or 3 years of MASH. They came out with a show. It was just a pilot. Then it was got picked up. It was 13 episodes. It was kind of a black MASH show that was about the Red Ball Express, a trucking company in World War II.
Right.
It was overseas. And so I was part of that show, and that lasted 13 weeks. Then sadly, didn't get picked up. But I was always drawn to the MASH crowd, to Alan and, you know, and to Mike Farrell and all that wonderful gang. And to see them again on year 8 of that show when I'd been next door to them doing that other Gene Reynolds, Larry Gelbart show was a real treat.
I want to ask you about your products and talk about what's happening with Begley's Best. We chatted about a little bit last time you were on. Begley's Best products are available at Walmart, at Amazon.com. I understand your pet products will soon be available at Chewy.com as well. How important was you, Ed, to get this partnership with the people at Lab Clean?
It was very important because I had, since 1970, been a guy, a cheapskate and an environmentalist both, who was always drawn to vinegar and water and baking soda to clean things. And that will do a certain level of cleaning. You know, we're talking real, you know, geodesic dome cleaning, let's say, kind of just keeping the, you know, making sure the love beads are clean, the lava lamps, that kind of stuff was fine for. But as we grow older and you want a different level of clean, you know, there's been some good products and some of them, I'm going to talk about all of them. If you pick mine, that's fine, but pick one of them. Seventh Generation, as you probably know, has a great line of products for years, and they're all very, very good. Eco's great product for years. What we said about doing with LabClean, to have products every bit as good as Formula 409 and Windex and all that, but they're totally non-toxic. And we're able to achieve that because we don't just test it ourselves for its safety. We have third-party testing, EPA designed for the environment testing. And so that is a very neutral third-party testing, saying it's super, super non-toxic and low impact. So you get to do the other kind of testing yourself because you're going to know right away if it cleans good or it doesn't. And we passed that test with flying colors. Great cleaners. Mark Cunningham is a great friend. It was a happy day the day that I met him, got involved with his company. And we've got a nice line of products now and they're doing quite well.
Yeah. And isn't there a perception, among some people who haven't tried them that, these products are fine and they're safe for the environment, but they don't clean as well as the chemical products?
Yeah, we got to own a little bit of that because that was the case for years. Stuff was, nice and non-toxic and didn't hurt anybody, but it also didn't clean very good. People wanted it and they deserve to have it both ways. Should clean good too, like really good. So that was our goal. We set out to achieve that goal and we were able to do it, which is nothing short of a miracle. But Mark Cunningham is a genius and his friends that have these great formulas are geniuses all. And you can do it. It can be done. It's a little extra work, a little extra expense, but it's worth it to have something that cleans good and is safe around your kids and pets. So keep in mind, kids are crawling in the floor, like my grandson putting his fingers in his mouth. Pets are crawling around the floor, licking the floor, putting their paws in their mouth. You want those little ones to be as safe as possible. By body weight, they're taking a big hit if you're using some toxic floor cleaner or other toxic products. Stop it. Do something today. Vinegar and water, something, baking soda. And then if you got the dough, and most people do, move up the bladder a little bit and get some good products like mine and some of the others I mentioned.
I can offer a positive review right from my own home. Our dog Ginger is not a big fan of baths. We try not to do too many of them, but she had her spring bath and survived that. But I said, I'm going to try Ed's waterless pet shampoo. And she loves it. It's great. She smells terrific. She looks good. So it's a big success story in our house.
Same thing happened at our house. I was ready for my spring bath. Michelle put it on me, got me in the sink there. And I smell better apparently. And I'm a little easier to be close to. So it's springtime. It's time for, I guess it's actually summer now, isn't it?
It is indeed. I want to ask you, Ed, if we can, about a few things that people can do, because I think most people understand the need that we're facing here and the challenge that we face as we deal with climate change and everything that's going on in the world. Some steps that people could take right away that may not have a big impact on their lives, but they can do to start being headed in the right direction. And I know one that you recommend is to go vegan, or at the very least, to cut back on the consumption of red meat.
Yeah, just try one day a week. If you're a big meat eater, see if you can go a day without it. See how that is for you. If you like it, maybe do a couple of days. If you like vegetable dishes, and I do, I haven't had meat, red meat since 1970, or veal or lamb or pork or anything like that. But for a while I ate different, like fish and stuff like that. But I find vegan diet is a good diet. I encourage people to do that, but don't get put off by not being able to go to the top of the hill there. Just do what you can one day a week, 2 days a week. If you like it, do it a few more. And I'm very lucky that I enjoy vegan food the way I do. And I'm a cook, so I like to make vegan dishes. And I made some soups for my son and his friends when they were in town, all these vegan soups, and people flip for them. They're every bit as flavorful as any chicken stock soup or ham bone soup that you're going to make.
And you certainly do this, but anybody who's got, you don't need a couple of acres of land, just a little bit of space. And the wonder that comes from growing your own food, the satisfaction that comes from that is, it's going to help the planet, sure, but it's also going to help you and you're going to feel great. And if you got kids like I do, my 8-year-old watching that process and seeing it all happen changes their outlook on the planet.
Richard, that's why I put in my first vegetable garden in 1979. I did it because I wanted my kids to know that food didn't come from the Safeway bush or the Vons tree or what have you. I wanted to know where food came from. Good, healthy soil, moisture, water that we got to conserve and protect, and sunshine. It needs, you know, needs nutrients. It needs good soil, water, and so a little bit of care, and you're going to have a beautiful vegetable garden. I got my corn coming in now. I'm eating my tomatoes already. So I'm very, very lucky to have that.
And a simple thing that people can do, you can be in an apartment and still do this, is to begin composting.
Start composting. I did it back in 1970. I got a little diaper pail back then, and I put those food scraps in there. Then once a week, I didn't even have a place to start a proper compost thing in the apartment complex. So I took it nearby to railroad tracks, you know, near me. I put it in there just so it would return to the earth. And things started to grow there. I saw how easy it was to grow cherry tomatoes. They just started growing. So that was a catalyst for me to finally, when I had a piece of dirt I could call my own, to have a vegetable garden and to grow some things. And I've been growing food ever since the late 70s.
What else could people do around the house to make a difference?
Do all the stuff that you can afford. Start with the cheap and easy stuff that's within your budget. Bike riding, if weather and fitness permit. Public transportation, if it's available near you and you feel safe with a mask on the subway or the bus or whatever. Energy-saving thermostat, energy-efficient light bulbs. Composting, if you got a little area in your home or apartment. Vegetable garden, if you got a little bit of room for that. Vegetarian, you know, become a vegan or vegetarian. If you can try that, and hopefully you'll like it. All those things I just mentioned, very cheap, and you will save money, I guarantee it.
Our state here in Maine, we did a nice thing back about a year ago, and the state banned the use of single-use plastic bags.
Good on you. We're going to do it here in California, I think, right now. We're poised to do it. We'll see if we pull it off. So, I'm old enough to remember I lived a life without any plastic bags. We had some paper bags for some things. If you bought a greeting card or a pack of gum, you know, they sometimes put in a little paper bag unless you told them, please don't do that. But now you got to be vigilant. No plastic bags, please don't. And I've been bringing my canvas bags since the 70s, some of them to look at. Believe me, you know I've been bringing them since the 70s, Rich. So, those are alternatives. A lot of the places are very happy to not give you a bag now because they realize, used to be they said, no, we've got to give it insurance or whatever they said that was true or not true. Now they're happy to save the quarter, the 25 cents it cost them, not just to make the bag, but to store it there, to store it in the storage room, to move it from the truck to the storage room, to move it from the storage room to the counter, the person's time it takes to put in, the, you know, it all adds up. I think it's something like 25 cents a bag it costs them. They're very happy to not pay it.
Ed, it's great to talk with you again. Every time you come on, I feel like we've just had your old friend Cindy Williams on. She was with us a few months ago getting ready to go off and do her one-woman tour.
She's so great. I can't wait to talk to her again. You've given me a catalyst to give her a ring today, so thank you for that. I love that woman and have since 1970. My God, we're working on Room 222, and I met her at a Christmas party there. So it'd be great to talk to her. Thank you for bringing that up, and I hope to see you again soon, pal.
Hey, it's great talking with you, Ed. Appreciate your wonderful work in Queer as Folk and Better Call Saul and everything you do, but most of all, the way you walk the walk as an environmental activist and helping all of us figure out it's pretty easy to do the right thing. So thank you, as always, for spending some time with us today.
And thank you for putting up with my topsy-turvy life here as we set up this morning. Thank you, pal.
You're welcome. Good luck with that grandson, too.
I appreciate it, bud.
Thanks again, Ed.
Bye, Rich.
Bye-bye now. What an awesome guy.